The Todd Alba Show.
Terry Barr, host of Slice of Wisconsin here on Civic Media. Mr. Zommers, what is that called?
My Wife is Drunk by Terry's favorite, Alvin Stasinski.
There you go.
Yeah. It's so funny to listen to a polka because you think, where did that song come from?
Right? We actually had one person text during the break there said, how about the Meadow Muffin Polka?
Todd, let's quickly write that and make it.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to special coverage on WLCX La Crosse, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, WRCE Richland Center, and WFHR Wisconsin Rapids. This is Civic Media.
All right, and welcome back, everyone. We're going to start right off. We're going to go with Rebecca Cook first. And the question is, President Biden has forgiven $29 billion in student loan debt. Is this kind of forgiveness the right approach? Rebecca Cook.
So I was fortunate enough to get through college with the help of the FAFSA program, so work study job and also Pell Grants. And some of the things that, you know, I've been in favor of is instead of just some of the Band-Aid solutions that we've seen, because there's actual structural reform that we need to accomplish, are expanding Pell Grants to middle-income and low-income families, better regulation of our for-profit colleges, and also taking on predatory student loan lending businesses, who are really a big piece of this puzzle and a real big issue for the state that we're in right now, and also addressing administrative bloat. I'll give you a story, an example. I was going through these questions with my mom. I guess I'm always doing debate prep with my mom. She's a real, true north. And we were talking about my Aunt Linda, who went back to school in her 40s. She's a single mom. And she is now retired, is on Social Security, and she is still paying into student loans. And so we need to restructure programs that are plunging Americans into permanent cycles of debt. And that's something that I'm committed to.
Eric Wilson.
Make it free. I think it's pretty simple. As Democrats, education is the great equalizer. We need to be getting rid of student loan debt that has been skyrocketing. No longer, you have to work four jobs to try to pay for what you used to be able to do on a part-time job. We need to ensure that we are also making higher education free, institutions, public universities, trade schools. If we got rid of student loan debt, it's an economics issue too. $1.4 trillion into our economy over the next 10 years. People can afford houses, they can buy new cars, they can add to our economy. Get rid of student debt. Make our education free. It's an investment in our community and our society.
Thank you. Katrina Shanklin.
I think that all of the solutions as it relates to tackling student loan debt really need to be prospective and not just retroactive. We are looking at current generations, some of whom are here tonight, who are UWL students, who are staring down a huge student loan debt future. And that inhibits the economy and it predicates their choices. And so many people who aren't here tonight chose not to go to college because it felt out of reach for them because of the cost of tuition. The state of Wisconsin used to spend almost 60% of the higher education costs for UW system. Now it's about 13 to 15%, sometimes 20, depending on which campus you are. Who's footing the bill? It's students. So we need to be looking forward beyond what President Biden has done. And what I would champion is fully and fairly funding our higher education systems and need-based financial aid to prevent student loan debt from accruing. I think future generations would appreciate that approach, because regardless of what path you choose, technical college, university, an apprenticeship with a trade, you deserve to have the choice. You deserve to be able to make that decision and not take on crippling debt for the rest of your life. So if we're going to be funding higher education, we need to be talking about need-based financial aid first and making sure that higher education is actually affordable, which it's not. And I think the majority of folks at every every college campus across Wisconsin would say it's certainly a bill that they think about on a daily basis. So I want to be a leader in Congress to not only prevent student loan debt from accruing, but also to make sure the doors of our 4- and 2-year campuses across Wisconsin stay open.
Thank you. So I actually had a follow-up question that was, how can we prevent this in the future? And I feel like that's the question we answered, is how we can prevent this in the future. So I'm going to go back and just say, so myself as an example, I graduated when I was 22. I've been paying student loans for 28 years. I now owe more than I took out still after 28 years of paying. So while I agree with everything that we've been talking about in terms of what to do in the future, what do we need to do for people that have student loans right now and have been paying for them for a long time? What is the right solution for that group? Starting with Rebecca Cook.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking at interest rates and how could we refinance interest rates, you know, I think looking at how long somebody has had their loans, like you mentioned, you've had them for a couple of decades at this point. So, you know, looking, is there a certain time frame in which those kinds of things can be forgiven? I think those are things that I'd be interested in looking at.
Eric Wilson.
You've already paid your loans. What you're paying is the interest, which is fake money. So get rid of it.
Katrina Shanklin.
I think what President Biden has done with the SAVE payment plan is a great start, and looking at restructuring how you pay back your student loan debt, which you took out, is a good way forward. I also think programs like the Public Service Student Loan Forgiveness Program, which Democrats reformatted and streamlined recently, are a great thing. We need to look at expanding them, especially as it relates to workforce issues, when it comes to getting rural healthcare providers, for example, looking at student loan forgiveness to get child psychiatrists in rural Wisconsin, as one example. And so that's the approach that I would take. I would say, first and foremost, we need problem solvers at the table working across the aisle to enact all of this into law, so we don't have to rely on court decisions undoing what presidents have done via executive order. That's a worry of mine. I want to make sure in a bipartisan way we're actually getting long-term results that future generations can count on, as well as current student debt holders.
Thank you. Our next topic is LGBTQ rights, and this will start with Eric Wilson. What can be done to provide children who are struggling with their gender identity the care they need?
So I'm actually in this race because of Club Q. November of 2022, there was a shooting at the club in Colorado Springs. My community is under attack. And we need people that are going to step up, that understand and are willing to fight for everyone. We need to be providing people the resources to be themselves. That's all we are asking for, is to be allowed to be ourselves and to not have the pressures of our society, where my community is twice, if not more, likely to kill ourselves because we don't have the support of the community and families. And so I want to make sure that no one has to feel that way, and that everyone has that support system, because we can. We need to be investing in mental health. 30% of Gen Z, the upcoming generation, identifies as non-straight. That's a huge portion of our population that is struggling and that doesn't have the resources that they need. And so as an elected official, I will make sure that we are advocating for those resources, making sure that rural communities are not being left behind, that colleges, that public schools have the resources to provide for everyone.
Thank you. Katrina Shanklin.
When it comes to this issue, I want the person who asked this question and everyone who is part of the trans community to feel seen, heard, and valued. We have seen far right-wing extremists in Wisconsin and across the country use trans kids especially as political pawns, and it is sickening, it is harmful, and it is wrong. As a state lawmaker, I was proud to stand against a tax on access to gender-affirming care, because I know that the Republican politicians who were leading the charge in that fight were using our kids as political tools. It's wrong, and what we need to have are champions on this issue. In Congress, I will not only co-sponsor the Equality Act, which will enshrine non-discrimination provisions into so many different parts of our federal laws, including fair housing, employment, and so much more, but I'll also be an ally and bring folks together who are part of the community to really understand the issues and be the best advocate I can be for you. I want to say, especially as it relates to this issue, seeing Republicans hurt kids in a way that not only makes them struggle, but as what Eric said, really can lead to long-term mental health consequences, is something we all have a responsibility as a society and as candidates to stand up against.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
LGBTQ folks are our neighbors, they're our friends, they're our family, they're my employer, they're my cousins, and are part of our community that should be treated with dignity and with respect. And it starts by passing the Equality Act, which is an incredibly comprehensive package that impacts housing and employment. And I think we also need to be incredibly proactive when it comes to looking at the Supreme Court, which overturned Roe v. Wade. And I have to think that marriage equality is next, amongst many, many other things. And we have far-right Republicans, people like Derek Van Orden, who are more invested in the status quo and making this about culture wars than just doing the right thing for members of our community.
And as a follow-up question to this, and you've alluded to it a little bit, but why do you think Republicans are so interested in this specific topic? This seems to be a topic in many ways, both gender-affirming care, but also anything really related to the LGBTQ population, that Republicans are kind of always seem to be on the attack of. And I was wondering, why do you think that is? Eric Wilson.
Because we've normalized everyone else in the community. And so it's their next target. It's the smallest group within the LGBTQ community. And so they are demonizing it. They're attacking it. Representation matters. We've actually already elected a gay person in this district in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And so, like, representation matters. And so it's standing up and standing in solidarity with each other to support one another. And it's also small things such as putting it on your website that you're in support of LGBTQ rights and the community. I'm the only one at this table that has it on my website. Those things matter.
Katrina Shanklin.
Why do you think Republican politicians use us and other marginalized folks and are constantly working to divide and conquer us? It's how they win elections. They sow fear. They want us to fight each other so we don't notice when they're fighting everyone. They fight progress. They want a national abortion ban. We know that marriage equality was at risk until Senator Tammy Baldwin led the charge. We know that our right to privacy is still at risk. And we know that so much more is on the chopping block should Donald Trump get elected, should Republican members of Congress hold to the keys to power, including radical Derek Van Orden, who is certainly not an ally in these issues. Why do they so hate? They don't want to solve problems. They thrive on creating problems. We need people who aren't just willing to stand up to them, but who know when to reach across the aisle and when they're working to compromise our values on these issues when it relates to equality and non-discrimination and ensuring everyone has the ability to be safe. You can count on me. I have the experience and the capital. I've stood up against these attacks. I know what they look like. And I'll tell you, I'm ready for this fight in Congress.
Rebecca Cook?
This is a tactic by the far right in creating fear in one another and fear of our own neighbors, creating chaos. We've seen it ever since Donald Trump took office. And it's something that's permeated now throughout our country at the congressional level and even at the school board level. It's permeated to a library in our own district in Prairie du Chien, where Derek Van Orden brought a young librarian to tears over a Pride book display. This is who our current representative is. And I think now it's more important than ever for us to come together, to find common ground, to not demonize one another and demonize our neighbors, or to have fear of difference, but to unify.
Thank you. Our next topic is reproductive rights. All three of you have called for the codifying of Roe v. Wade into law. So my question then goes beyond that. What else do we need to do other than codify Roe v. Wade into law to protect people's right to choose? Katrina Shanklin.
Our freedoms are on the ballot this November, and every person should have the freedom to make their own medical decisions. Codifying Roe v. Wade into law is one of the most important things that we can do in Congress, and that's something I will lead the charge on. But I also believe we need to ensure that we're codifying the right to privacy and ensuring that fertility treatments are not only allowed but covered by health insurance. I am a co-author of a bill in the Capitol right now that would require all Wisconsin insurance companies to cover IVF treatment for fertility. And in addition, I am a lead author of a bill to make birth control more accessible. I know that Republicans won't stop at abortion access. They not only want a national abortion ban, they want to go after birth control and IVF next, not on our watch. And so what I will tell you is, when it comes to this issue, it's finding anyone who will work together on enhancing access to birth control, whether it's 12 months in one go. If you're a member of if you're a service member or somebody who lives in a rural area who doesn't have ready access to a pharmacy, that is life-changing. Getting a bill like that passed on the federal level will be one of my top priorities. Because when it comes to women's health, we need to be doing everything we can to advance this conversation, to advance access to reproductive health care, and that's comprehensive family planning services, including IVF.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
So I'll share a story. Before last cycle, when I was running, I had a friend of mine that was pregnant and was expecting a baby with her husband. And it was right after Roe v. Wade had been overturned. And she was in labor and had some complications in delivery. And she had to wait while her doctor called a room full of lawyers to find out if he could do this life-saving procedure, or whether he or she would be arrested. And it's crazy to think that in 2024, this is where we are at with both women's reproductive freedoms and just women's rights in general. I remember going in to see my OBGYN right after that, right after Roe v. Wade was overturned, and she had been telling me how many people had come in to get IUDs because women were afraid then that birth control was going to be next. And we've seen in state legislatures across the country, they've come for IVF, they're going to come for birth control, they're going to also come for things like stem cell research. These are Republicans, far-right Republicans, that have no respect for women and the choices that they can make about their own bodies. And I can tell you that I'm never going to be passing legislation, and I don't, my role is not in a doctor's office with you and your doctor and your family making decisions about your health care. This is in contrast to somebody like Derek Van Orden, who has at one point called for a nationwide abortion ban. This is who we're running against. I think how far to the right he is, I think, is a threat to all women, and we've got to be on offense here.
Thank you. Eric Wilson.
Yeah, this is straightforward. I believe in unrestricted abortion access. Women should have bodily autonomy. And I will do everything that I can to make sure that you are able to make the decisions about your body, that you have privacy, that you have access to birth control, that you have access to IVF. It is not my place. And so I will make sure that I do everything to stand by you and your rights.
Thank you. As a follow-up question, should insurance companies be required to cover abortion care, reproductive care? Katrina Shanklin.
That's a great question. I think especially how it's drafted is important here. What I'll tell you right now is currently there is a court case specifically related to emergency room access for life-saving abortions, and Republicans are literally trying to end access to that. Can we and should we cover abortion care as insurance companies? I think that's a reasonable question that we need to have a dialogue about. As it relates to abortion access, especially as it relates to emergencies, the fact that we're even having this conversation because of right-wing extreme Republicans is embarrassing. Congressman Derek Van Orden should be a one-term member of Congress over this issue.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
My answer is yes, I think insurance companies should cover abortion. Abortion is healthcare.
Eric Wilson.
I'm in support of Medicare for All, which, yes, would include abortion care, and it takes the insurance component out of this.
Thank you. Our next question has to do with unions and right to work. And the question is, should the federal government act to override state right to work laws? Does the federal government have that ability, first off? And second, if they do have that ability, should they? Rebecca Cook.
Yeah, the answer is hell yeah. So I come from a union family. My brother is a union firefighter down in Madison. My sister works for the Teachers Union, Education Minnesota, and an NEA affiliate. And one of my top priorities when I get to Congress is getting the PRO Act passed, which would undo the work that Scott Walker and his cronies did with Act 10. And I can't think of a piece of legislation that would really change working families' lives throughout our state. You know, I was fortunate enough last cycle to earn the support of a number of firefighters' unions, as well as SEIU and the Painters Union. And this cycle, I've been endorsed by APWU, the American Postal Workers Union, as well as Communication Workers of America. And I've earned that kind of support because I show up. I've showed up at actions for Gunderson healthcare workers here in La Crosse, picketing with Teamsters, striking with Teamsters at Line and Kugel's up in Chippewa Falls, as well as with doing UPS practice pickets with Teamsters in Eau Claire. And, you know, I'm going to be a staunch supporter of union families and working families throughout Wisconsin. In addition to passing the PRO Act, I want to see Davis-Bacon prevailing wage provisions passed. I want to see that every federally funded project that comes to this district, to the 3rd Congressional District, has a project labor agreement attached to it. And I also support registered apprenticeship programs and expanding our workforce in that capacity.
Thank you. Eric Wilson.
Yes, I'm in support of the PRO Act. I think it's, I come from a union family as well. My dad was a teacher and actually had to retire because Scott Walker was busting the unions in the state. If we are able to do that at a federal level, we will protect the right to organize. Mm-hmm. And so I think we absolutely should. We should also be making sure that people, minimum wage, $15 should be the bare minimum, right? Like, we need to be fighting so that everyone has the ability to have a good life and has dignity in the job that they're working and has big corporations don't care about us, right? We are just numbers. And so by using the ability to organize, we can actually push back and we can fight for the things that we deserve and that we need.
Katrina Shanklin.
Should Congress repeal right to work laws across not only Wisconsin, but other states in the Midwest and across the country? Absolutely. And I will be a co-author of the PRO Act, which would do that and also ensure enforcement of existing laws. In addition to that, I want to fund the NLRB so that they can make sure that companies like Starbucks, who are retaliating against people who are organizing their unions, actually are able to ensure their rights. In addition to the PRO Act, I want to specifically champion the Public Service Freedom to Negotiate Act, which would ensure that collective bargaining rights are available to public employees. And this is an issue really important to me as somebody who grew up in a union household. My parents are teachers. I saw what Act 10 did. Just like we need to repeal right to work in Wisconsin and across the country, so too should we restore collective bargaining rights for public employees. I am the lead author of a bill to do so for educators specifically in Wisconsin. It's something I'm going to champion across for states across the country as well. And in addition, I want to add that I'm really proud to have working men and women standing beside me in this campaign with the endorsement of 12 labor unions and the AFL-CIO, because I stand with working people every day of the week, and it's what I'll bring, that experience and trust to Congress.
Great. Thank you. Our next question is about Social Security. What specific actions can the federal government take to protect and expand Social Security for future retirees? This starts with Rebecca Cook.
Or does it start with?
Oh, it starts with Eric Wilson.
Raising the cap isn't a solution. We need to eliminate it. We also need to keep the age where it's at. Everyone deserves to retire with dignity, and everyone deserves to retire. I think there's a lot of people in our generation, we don't feel that we are going to retire. We will have to work forever. That's a problem. There are a lot of people that depend on Social Security to just live. And so it's raising the cap to make sure that everyone is paying their fair share. Elon Musk stopped paying Social Security tax 4 minutes into the year. That's ridiculous.
Thank you. Katrina Shanklin.
I was just in Eau Claire recently standing with folks to demand that Republicans stop their attacks on Social Security. And I'm really proud to be endorsed by Social Security Works, which doesn't always endorse in Democratic primaries, but knows that we need champions on this issue. Everyone deserves to retire with dignity and economic security. Republicans want to raise the retirement age and gut Social Security and Medicare. And I will stand up to those attacks as a proven leader on retirement security in Wisconsin, but also work on issues like co-authoring the Social Security 2100 Act, which would fund Social Security through 2100, raise the payments to seniors by at least 2%, depending on the individual, and scrap the cap. I think actually lift the cap above $400,000 earners. That's important because right now there are people within seconds of the first day of the year, billionaires who work 19 seconds who are done 19 seconds later for paying into Social Security for the rest of the year. How many of us can say that? Zero. The working families and seniors of Western and Central Wisconsin deserve a leader who will deliver on this promise and ensure that their retirement security is not only intact, but livable.
Rebecca Cook.
So my parents are both on Social Security and Medicare, and they rely on those checks on a monthly basis, as I know that seniors across Wisconsin and across the 3rd Congressional District do. You know, like my colleagues here tonight, I support scrapping the cap and ensuring that higher earners are paying into the system. I was also just this last week at an action for Wisconsin Alliance for Retired Americans and AFG in Eau Claire, standing in solidarity to ensure that we're not cutting these critical programs that are so important to seniors across the country. I think we need to both preserve and protect Social Security, but also expand it and expand Medicare to cover vision, dental, and hearing, the very things that deteriorate as folks age. And, you know, I know Derek Van Orden and far-right members of Congress have called on multiple occasions to scrap both of these programs. And I think it's a real good indicator of, you know, what does our country really stand for and how do we treat our youngest and our oldest parts of our society? And I think that we know where the far-right Republican team is on those issues.
As a follow-up question, I've been helping my parents navigate some of the Medicare things, and it's utterly bizarre. Medicare A, Medicare B, D, C, all these letters and plans and bizarre things. What can we do to expedite that? Eric Wilson.
I'm the only candidate here that is fighting for Medicare for all. That means that you don't have to worry about your A's and B's and C's and D's. You just get health care. Who doesn't deserve health care?
Thank you. Katrina Shanklin.
I talked to a lot of seniors about Medicare and specifically the prescription drug program, the donut hole, and their out-of-pocket costs. And I think it's fantastic that congressional Democrats led on capping out-of-pocket costs and allowing Medicare to negotiate with big pharmaceutical companies to lower the cost of prescription drugs. I want to build on that progress. I know for too many, their Medicare plans are confusing, and there are scam Advantage marketing plans out there. I've heard repeatedly from constituents who unfortunately have personally been tricked by them and think something is covered but isn't. Most recently, a constituent with a bill that was supposed to be covered but wasn't and was worried about medical debt. We have a responsibility to improve Medicare, and that includes making it less confusing and more accessible to seniors while holding the line on Republican attacks. They want to gut Medicare by 40%. So when we talk about affordable health care, we need to make sure that Medicare works and works for everyone and improve on the promise of it while also holding the line against Republican attacks.
Rebecca Cook.
I told this story a little bit earlier tonight, but my dad, who is on Medicare, when he went in to get those prescription drugs, I mean, he was so surprised at the price of them, though he's on Medicare. Right. And he's now getting his prescription drugs through Mark Cuban's for-profit business because it's $200 a month versus $1,300. And, you know, we should be making Medicare less confusing and more accessible for our seniors. That comes at, you know, from healthcare in general, but also the prescription drug crisis that we have.
Thank you. We're now going to take our final 2-minute break for civic media and station identification. We'll be back in just a second.
You're listening to a live broadcast of the 3rd Congressional District Democratic Primary Candidate Forum from UW La Crosse.
This special is presented exclusively by Civic Media on WLCX La Crosse, WCFW HD2 The Taft, Chippewa Falls, WRCE Richland Center, and WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
We'll return in just a moment. Stay with us for more live coverage from UW La Crosse. The Maggie Dawn Show.
We're going to have policy arguments for the rest of time. But at base, I want my president to be a decent person. I firmly believe that Joe Biden always is trying to do the right thing, that he is a decent man. And in sharp contrast, we've got a man who thinks it's a good thing that stars get to commit sexual assault. And we know that because he said it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
I'm really excited right now because I've wanted to have this guy on for a while. He is a legendary stand-up comedian. You know him as Tom Dreesen. Tom, welcome to Nightline.
Pete, it's nice to talk to you. Let me tell you how I became a legend. All my critics are dead.
Did you have anything to do with that? Don't say anything, Tom.
No, I refuse to answer on the grounds it might incriminate me. I'll plead the fifth on that.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is a live broadcast of the 3rd Congressional District Democratic Primary Candidate Forum from UW La Crosse.
This special is presented exclusively by Civic Media on WLCX La Crosse, WCFW HD2 The Taft, Chippewa Falls, WRCE Richland Center, and WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
Now, back to our moderator, William Garcia, chair of the 3rd Congressional District in La Crosse County, live from the UW La Crosse campus.
And welcome back to the last half hour of the 3rd CD, Democratic Primary Candidate Forum. Before we move on to our final few questions, I did want to actually make a pitch for joining your local Democratic Party. County parties all over the 3rd CD are working tirelessly to elect Democrats up and down the ballot, and they would absolutely love your support. It is $25 a year. $10 if you are on limited income. And all you need to do is just Google your local county's Democratic Party, or you could go to our 3rd CD website. That's 3rdcdwisdems.com. That's 3rdcdwisdems.com. And you'll find there a list and contact information for all of the counties in the 3rd CD. So please consider that as we go forward. Now, going back to our fort, this is about a wealth tax, and this is also our longest question, so okay. Sorry about that, but The Trump tax cuts are set to expire in 2025. They were specifically designed to expire as soon as Trump went out of office if he had won a second term. So, people are kind of scrambling to figure out how to replace those. Biden has promised not to raise taxes on anyone earning less than $400,000 a year. But to pay for all of the things that we need to do, Biden has said he will enact measures that would raise taxes on stock buybacks, increase the corporate income tax, and corporate alternative minimum taxes, and finally, institute a new 25% billionaire tax on individuals with wealth defined as a total value of their assets of more than $100 million. So the question is, do you support these types of tax increases that specifically target wealthy Americans? And this starts with Katrina Shanklin.
I really appreciate this thoughtful question. For far too long, the wealthiest among us, America's billionaires and millionaires and wealthy corporations, have not been paying their fair share. And let's look at why that is. In 2021, when Democrats in Congress had the opportunity to repeal the incredibly inequitable and regressive wealthy Trump windfalls, the tax breaks for the corporate billionaires, who stood in the way? It was a Democrat. It was Kyrsten Sinema. So who we elect matters, because Kyrsten Sinema actually said to Joe Manchin that she didn't want to raise taxes on corporations. President Biden released two months ago, March 2024, a budget plan to lower taxes on working families while ensuring the wealthiest billionaires, not only in Wisconsin, but across the country, finally pay their fair share. I hear all the time across the third about people who can't make ends meet, who are very worried and feel very strongly they've already paid in. And they're right. They've done more than their fair share. It's time to right that wrong. What are we going to do next? Let's start with the Biden budget plan, Senator Wyden's billionaire tax, and so much more. I think making sure that we're not giving working families the bill is my primary focus, while also holding the wealthiest among us, who, like Amazon, haven't paid in for a long time, accountable and making them pay their fair share.
Thank you, Rebecca Cook.
I was brought up working class. I'm still working class, and I've always paid my fair share, and I was brought up to do just that. And the wealthy in this country should be paying their fair share, too. In Congress, I'll support closing tax loopholes. I like the carried interest loophole. We've seen career politicians like Kyrsten Sinema kill reform on to allow hedge fund managers greater reductions on their taxes, and that's just not right. I think that should also include higher marginal tax rates on higher earners. People like Derek Van Orden are not taking progressive stances on this because they are more beholden to special interests and their donors than they are to getting things done for working Western Wisconsinites.
Thank you. Eric Wilson.
Bernie was right. We need to raise taxes on wealthy individuals and close loopholes. Biden was right. We need to raise taxes on corporations and close loopholes. Elizabeth Warren was right. We need to have a wealth tax. Her proposal is 2% on anyone over 50 million and 3% on anyone over a billion. If we did that, we would raise $1.4 trillion that we can use to reinvest in our community and fund the programs that we need, not just the top.
Thank you. Our next question is about guns, and specifically, do you support an assault weapons ban? And I believe, are we starting with Eric? Or
I started last time.
You started last time, so it's Rebecca Cook.
Yeah, okay. Great. So here in Western Wisconsin, we have a rich heritage of hunting and gamesmanship. But I don't know the last time that I've seen an assault rifle at a deer camp. I support gun legislation and gun reform, like universal background checks, which is something that a lot of gun owners agree upon. And want to see get passed. When I'm talking to folks like in union halls, they ask me when I come in and I'm a Democrat, are you going to take our guns? And I said, no, I want everybody to be as just a responsible gun owner as you are. I think it's also to be enforcing important to be enforcing red flag laws. Those go up when somebody is a harm to themselves or others. And I do support an assault rifle ban.
Thank you. Eric Wilson.
Yeah, I believe in assault weapon ban. I support responsible gun ownership. I just got the distinction from the Moms Demand gun action, and that's because I'm talking about it. I am talking about this topic everywhere I go because it's important. We can't be avoiding topics that are difficult. And no, I'm not trying to come and take everyone's guns away, but we need to be reasonable about it. We don't need weapons and weapons of war in our houses. We can make sure that our guns are safe. I come from a hunting family. You know that you never point a rifle and you treat a rifle as it is, it's always loaded. There are a lot of incidents of children getting hurt because we aren't doing enough. Our kids shouldn't have to worry about active shooter drills in school. It used to be we were just focusing on tornado drills. Now they're talking about active shooter drills. We can do better as a society. Guns are the number one killer of children in Wisconsin. We can do better. And I will be a strong advocate for responsible gun ownership when elected to Congress.
Thank you. And Katrina Shanklin.
I'm a hunter, and I'm a member of the Isaac Walton League. I have this conversation with a lot of hunters who identify from all political ideologies in Wisconsin. And one of the things we talk about is the importance of safe storage, hunter safety education, and responsible gun ownership. I support strong safe storage laws. I support enhancing our background check program and ending the gun show loophole, making sure that we pass red flag laws because Wisconsin doesn't have one right now, getting guns out of the hands of violent criminals, especially as it relates to cracking down on straw purchasing and enforcing those. I was a co-author of a bipartisan law in Wisconsin to do that. I also co-sponsored a bill that's pretty substantially similar to what we're talking about here, and that's a bill to ban bump stocks. When it comes to weapons of war, I think, and I hear this all the time from hunters too, you don't need a bump stock to hunt. So we should be not only talking about that, but also about providing resources to the federal government to enforce these laws, which continue to be a problem, especially as it relates to straw purchasing.
Thank you so much. Our next question is about inflation. And the question is, in addition to corporate price gouging, does the federal government carry any blame for inflation? This starts with Eric Wilson.
I think it does come back to corporate gouging, though. Like, profits are skyrocketing. I think the part of it is a lack of resources to enforce some of these issues, and if we were to fund the programs that we have appropriately, we could push back on big corporations and make sure that they aren't just charging whatever they want. That's the control that we need to be investing in the programs and holding them accountable. We need to be breaking up antitrust. I mean, we will always see consolidation of markets. We've seen it in telecoms, we see it in airlines. We see it across the board. Because of economies of scale, it will always come back. And so the role of our federal government is to make sure that we are breaking up big corporations that have the power to do whatever they want. So in some regards, yes, I don't feel that we have enforced the laws that we have enough to protect consumers and protect people.
Thank you, Katrina Shanklin.
Does the federal government carry any blame for inflation? Democrats passed the Inflation Reduction Act. They also provided key resources to small business owners, whether it was hairdressers, mom and pop diners on main streets across rural Wisconsin, and so much more to help them not only make payroll, but stay open beyond the pandemic. that sounds like where that question was addressing, but I really want to talk about what inflation is. If you look at the quarterly reports from the last 4 years, you will see the majority of them, once we got through the main part of the pandemic, actually came, inflation came from two things. Greedflation, or corporations just raising prices artificially, or in some cases, there were supply chain issues still. So when it comes to inflation, I have great empathy for everyone who not only is constantly thinking about, you know, will they be able to put food on the table and gas in their tank to get to work, but the federal government has a responsibility to not only enforce price gouging laws, but strengthen them. That's something that I will do as a member of Congress. It's something I've championed consumer protection in the legislature.
Thank you, Rebecca Cook.
As someone who owned a small business in this district for a number of years and still does run a small businesses, I know all too well the challenges that a lot of small businesses are facing throughout the 3rd Congressional District and the squeeze that inflation has put on working families. I also was a member through the pandemic of the WEDC board that put forth a lot of grants and a lot of support to small business owners throughout the 3rd Congressional District and throughout the state of Wisconsin. The bounce back grants that they had helping Main Street to bounce back. And those types of things are things that I think getting those things federally funded are so important. But it comes back to corporate price gouging, which I think is so important and I think is what we're dealing with today. And having politicians that are not going to be beholden to the special interests that are bankrolling their campaigns. We have to enforce antitrust laws. Otherwise, we're feeling the brunt of it in the housing market, at the grocery store, and at the gas pump. And it takes people with a real backbone and a real spine to stand up to these corporate monopolies.
Great. Thank you so much. And now our final question of the evening before closing statements. And this one was another one of our user-submitted questions. And it says, we only have one Earth and protecting it should be our top priority. Would you support a ban on fracking and offshore drilling practices that are causing irreparable harm to our planet? And this starts with Katrina Shanklin.
Thank you so much. I think acting on climate and doing everything within our power as a federal government, state government, even local government is crucial to ensure not only livability, but our future generations' security. When it comes to fracking and banning fracking as well as offshore drilling practices, I support President Biden's work moving forward on a few key initiatives. I think especially related to fracking, I know that it is incredibly harmful to our water quality, and there are so many issues to human health as it relates to it. So I would love to talk specifics about what that bill would look like, but would generally be very supportive with that, and in general, related to offshore drilling as well. I think when it comes to a healthy and stable climate, we need leaders who understand that we have very little time, and this moment demands urgency. In the state capitol, I fought tooth and nail for clean energy investments and clean water. It's something I want to do in Congress. I want to serve not only on the Agriculture Committee, but be a champion of conservation, not only in agriculture, but across Wisconsin and the nation. So would be happy to look at that bill and chat with the folks who asked that question. But in general, I'm supportive of doing everything we can to protect our climate for future generations.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
Both this cycle and running for Congress and last cycle, I've worked to build relationships with rural electric cooperatives around the 3rd Congressional District. I've been to Dairyland here in La Crosse to get a better understanding of how they're moving towards more renewable options. And one of the things that I think is important to note are the tax credits from the IRA that went to benefit rural electric cooperatives in reducing their reliance on carbon to moving to more renewable modes of power. I'm also really supportive of agrivoltaics and bringing along the farming and agricultural community with us as we move to more renewable energy options and being able to grow crops between solar fields. And so, looking at some of these renewable options first, I think is something that I'm more excited about as we work to really combat climate change and its effects. And this is in contrast to a lot of far-right Republicans who are climate deniers. numbers and don't believe in science. We need people that believe in science representing us in Congress and help protecting our Earth for future generations.
Thank you. Eric Wilson.
Yes, I'm in support of banning fracking. I think, like stated, we need to be as aggressive as possible because we are in a climate crisis. We don't have time. And so we need to be investing in solar. We need to be investing in renewable energies. And it's not just solar fields. It's making sure that we have a ton of buildings that we can put solar on. But we also need to be mindful in the legislation that we are passing. For example, there's a tax credit for public schools to put solar on there. Well, public schools don't file taxes. So that's a little bit of a conundrum, isn't it? We need to be mindful of what we're doing and how we can actually execute these things and that we aren't putting the burden on the people we are trying to help.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And now it is time to move to our closing statements. And we're going to start with the same person who started us last time. So, Representative Katrina Shanklin.
Thank you so much to everyone who came tonight and for the La Crosse County Democratic Party and College Dems for sponsoring this forum and civic radio. I'm Katrina Shanklin, and I'm running for Congress because we need proven leaders with the experience to deliver results for working families and seniors and the values you can trust. We heard from three candidates tonight, and one of us will have the opportunity to take on and hopefully defeat radical Congressman Derek Van Orden in November. I'm the only candidate in this race who's won an election. I think that's important. I'm the only candidate in this race who has passed bills into law. I think that's important. And I'm the only candidate in this race who has experience defeating a Republican at the ballot box. And that experience is what is going to help us win in November. When Republicans targeted me multiple times with hundreds of thousands of dollars in attack ads, I won my purple district by double digits. How did I win? By building and growing a coalition of Democrats, independents, and even some Republicans who care about issues like democracy and reproductive freedom. We need a leader who's laser focused on building that coalition and delivering results, because that's what it's going to take to beat a first-term vulnerable freshman who hopefully will be his last term. We get one shot at taking out Derek Van Orden. We saw last cycle that the DCCC and National Democrats failed to invest. Here's what's different this time. We know they're going to win the general. We have the opportunity to elect a candidate in this primary with a proven track record of not only winning elections and being the Democrat who got the most votes in her district, but also getting things done for seniors and working families. In stark contrast to Derek Van Orden, who has not gotten things done and has only created more problems for us in Congress. I ask for your vote in August because the stakes are too high. I'm proud to be represented or to be supported and endorsed by legislators from all over the 3rd Congressional District who recognize that we need someone with a proven track record of winning. And I'm proud to have earned the endorsement of 12 labor unions, the AFL-CIO, and Social Security Works. I'm asking for your vote in August to grow our winning coalition so together we can defeat Derek Van Orden in November.
Thank you so much. Rebecca Cook.
I think if there's one thing that all of us can agree on here tonight, and probably all of us in this room, is that Derek Van Orden has got to go. We talked at length about how his policies are just plain wrong for folks here in West Central Wisconsin, and everything else is really just plain embarrassing. I'm the one to defeat Derek Van Orden. What sets me apart from folks here tonight are my lived experiences. So many of us have lost our farms. So many of us struggle to pay our health care bills. So many of us have shuttered our small businesses. And so many of us are really living paycheck to paycheck. And when I'm out talking to voters across the district, I really hear the same stories. And we know that we can turn out Democratic voters in the general, but it takes someone with a background like mine that's going to influence and work to connect with swing, independent, and moderate voters to find common ground to be able to win this seat. When the seat opened up last cycle, to me, it felt like a real opportunity to step up and serve my community in a greater way. And now that feels even more urgent. We won 11 out of 19 counties in this district last cycle and lost by just 8% of the vote, despite being hugely outspent. We won in population centers like Eau Claire County and Portage County, but we also won in a lot of rural communities. And that's because we had a message that really resonated. The seat is one that's not going to be anointed by endorsements or lawmakers, but it will be earned. That campaign allowed us to build the 19-county infrastructure it's going to take to deliver this seat in November. It allowed me to build a profile to raise the resources to take on dark-moneyed far-right politicians like Derek Van Orden. And it showed me that we have a message that works, a working-class message, not a career politician. I know we can flip this seat back to blue, and I'm asking for your support. I'm going to need your help knocking every door in this district, even if it's down a dirt road, writing postcards, having tough conversations, but ones that I know can break through. Together, I know that we can mend the division in our country and in this district. And I'm asking for your vote in August, but again in November. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Eric Wilson.
While we're all Democrats, we have a lot of differences as well. If you want a progressive champion that's going to fight for the same message and the same things that Biden and Tammy are fighting for, that's me. We can win this district with a progressive message. Bernie won this district. And so that's something that we can't muddle down what we are actually fighting for. It's Medicare for all. It's talking about responsible gun ownership. It's talking about affordable housing. It's fighting for climate. We can't keep doing the same thing that we have done over and over again. To solve the challenges that we have ahead of us, we are going to have to think outside the box. That has been my career, thinking outside the box and actually getting things done. We have a problem, we find a solution, and we actually implement it. That's how we're going to move forward together. I'm fighting to be that fresh perspective. I'm fighting to be that progressive voice. But again, I can't do it alone. And so I'm asking for your support. It's asking to volunteer, to knock doors, to donate. Be part of a movement that is going to push through. We've got a lot of momentum. And we will continue to do so throughout the summer and on to November. Because ultimately, we're going to kick Derek's ass.
Thank you so much. And with that, that is our debate. Although I do want to jump in one more time. Would everyone, if our listeners and our audience would like to know how to find out more about you or how to donate to your campaign, what should they do? Katrina.
Katrina Shankland for Congress.com or Katrina for Wisconsin.com. I've been having coffees all over the district. Would love the opportunity to meet with you, chat with you as we collect nomination signatures and work to get out the vote. Thank you.
Rebecca Cook.
Cook for Wisconsin, C-O-O-K-E. I've got a silent E on my last name, and then F-O-R all spelled out, Wisconsin all spelled out. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I don't know if they're calling it that anymore. Not a great place anyways. But and you can follow us. We're doing a 19-county district tour that's going to be coming up here in the next month. We'll be rounding out into June with dairy breakfast and getting out to the county fairs this summer.
Eric Wilson.
WilsonForWisconsin.com. Is my website, and then that's the same for my socials. And we've already put on 9,000 miles this year, and we're going to continue on. So keep looking out for me being out there, because showing up is important, and showing up is how we're going to win this.
Thank you so much. And with that, could we have a round of applause for our candidates, please? I'm William Garcia, chair of the third CD, Democrats of Wisconsin. I hope you have a great day. Please consider joining us. It's going to be a long campaign between now and November, but the third CD Democrats are ready to fight, and we're ready to win. Thank you so much, and have a great night.
Join us on June 12th for another exclusive live broadcast of the 3rd Congressional District Forum, featuring the Democratic primary candidates from the UW-Platteville-Ulsvik Hall. You've been listening to this live broadcast on Civic Media.
Devil's Advocates Radio. Back to the politics.
The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 4 till 6. The Maggie Dawn Show.
This past week, the far, far right created what they called the Floor Action Response Team. The acronym there is FART. And no such stealth bills came to the floor that would cause the fart to rise. Again, I fact checked it. That's what they called themselves.
That name really stinks, Maggie. Sorry,
let
I had
the
to.
Puns roll
the
in.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.